Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 130 of Unblocking Crypto. Hal, holy cow, a packed week. Good to see you again.
Oh, yeah. Good to see you, man. Big week.
Yeah, so we just had the Bitcoin conference out in Nashville last weekend, and man, it was a very interesting event. And of course, I didn't go there, but I did watch a ton of their videos because everything was online for free. So let's start talking about that, because there were some really cool speakers and some really cool conversations. And Trump was kind of one of the headliners, which was fun to watch and kind of crazy at the same time, because that guy likes to talk and just spit stuff out of his mouth sometimes. So he did talk about the U.S. being this mining powerhouse, which is great. He also talked about that he was going to fire Gary Gensler on day one, which was hilarious to listen to because it got probably the biggest standing ovation of the entire conference. And he ended up saying it twice because he liked having people cheer and clap.
And yeah, that was funny. So, you know, I have listened to Trump a little bit more often lately. And when I listened to him talk a lot during COVID, and he's much as hard as it would be for somebody to believe that is just now starting to listen to Trump speak, his train of thought is better. He doesn't ramble as much and go off on tangents, but he loves getting crowd responses. And so he likes to butter up the crowd. Like he called the crowd geniuses, like, probably a dozen times, and to get the crowd on his side. But I think he was completely shocked at that response to the Gary Gensler getting fired thing. And I mean, he took like a 5 seconds of just enjoying the crowd applauding. Then he said it again. So there's a bit of that as showmanship and things like that. But I thought it was pretty funny. It was definitely like 80% campaign speech. And it's easy to nitpick through and go through and try to find little quotes that you disagree with. And I think that's kind of an engineering thing where you're trying to find the problems. And there's plenty in there. And Twitter's full of Bitcoin people that are upset that he used the word crypto, or, you know, talked about Bitcoin people playing with Bitcoin and stuff like that. But if you just zoom out, you had Donald Trump, who was the former president and right there with a strong chance of being the next president, at a Bitcoin conference talking about Bitcoin. And at least some of the things he said showed that he had some understanding of Bitcoin, right? He didn't just come out there and just campaign, you know? So, yeah, I think he's got Vivek in his ear. That's great. And his speech was pretty good, not great. But you want to talk about just getting the awareness that Bitcoin needs into normal people that don't pay attention to Bitcoin. I mean, if you're a diehard blue team or red team person, I don't think you're into Bitcoin a lot, right? Because it kind of, you start to just shift your priorities and your perspective and get away from the politics and understand more like, oh, it's really the money that was where your focus should be, and not on a lot of these policies. And so, yeah, I've had a lot of thoughts about it, because it's like, one, it was a $25 million campaign stop for Donald Trump. It was like I think it was his second biggest contribution to his campaign. The crypto super PAC is now the number one super PAC in the country, or for the Republican side. And so there's a part of me is like, he's pandering for votes. And the other part of me is like, I haven't been pandered to for votes in maybe ever. So I'm like, man, it is kind of nice to have politics looking my way and saying the things that I would like to hear them say. So I thought there was some really good stuff in there. And then there's some stuff that wasn't that great, but it's politics. You know, he's not a Bitcoin guy. He's a politician running for the presidency, and he's knows enough about Bitcoin. And honestly, it's a CEO mentality of putting the right people in the right spots. Vivek would be a good enough Bitcoin person to include in that. So no, I thought it was starting with Trump, you know, that was the big, like the moneymaker keynote speech. And I thought just Trump speaking at the conference in general was good. And he did a better than bad job of talking about Bitcoin.
Yeah, no, I mean, I from a high level, it's fantastic to have a presidential candidate talking that much about Bitcoin. And I mean, he's, like you said, he doesn't know everything, but he knows enough. He knows more than the average person at this point, which is kind of impressive. The whole fire Gary Gensler, as much as I would love for that to happen, I have yet to see anybody that can prove that he's actually able to fire Gary Gensler on day one. So I don't think that can happen. And it's one of those things where he just says stuff to say stuff a lot of times. We did talk about not selling any of the Bitcoin reserves that they have, because we are pretty much one of the largest reserves of any country out there. Although the next day, the U.S. moved $2 billion of Bitcoin. So everybody was kind of freaking out. I think what it sounds like, based on some of the intelligence companies out there, they think that is probably the Bitcoin that the Marshals transferred over to Coinbase Prime, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago, that the Marshals had chosen Coinbase for a new custodian. So it hasn't really been sold. It was just moved to a different wallet. But it was kind of like the worst timing ever.
I thought that was cool. Because how Trump handled that was neat. I don't want to go too backwards, but RFK Jr. spoke before Trump in a large keynote, and you know, he's basically got kicked out of the Democratic Party. He's running as an independent. He's like a Bitcoin guy. He's some of the stuff he said. He took his Monsanto fees from that $300 million case and bought it. I think he said he'd put it all into Bitcoin. So
all of his wealth, to my knowledge, Bitcoin is what he said. Bitcoin's conference last year that he came to, he said he has now moved all of his wealth over to Bitcoin.
Right. So, I mean, you're talking about he's a whale. I mean, the Monsanto case alone would have been almost $100 million in legal fees. So, you know, and it was at a, I don't know what the price of Bitcoin was, but under 30 grand. So you're talking about he's a big time holder of Bitcoin. He's a freedom guy and all that. Anyway, he basically just beat Trump to the punch and said, Trump's going to come up here and say we need a million Bitcoin strategic reserve. I think it should be 4 million because that's about 20% of the supply. And that's about what we do for gold. And he covered a lot of ground on that side. But then when Trump, you know, was expected to say strategic Bitcoin reserve, he never used that. He called it a stockpile. He said he'd keep that 200,000. And he said he would keep future Bitcoin that was accumulated. He didn't say we would buy Bitcoin. He didn't say, like, RFK was like, we're going to buy 550 Bitcoin a day, every day until we get to 4 million, where Trump was way more nebulous. So it was almost like Trump's not a very careful speaker, but it felt like he was trying to say things that were reasonable and could actually happen. And so I dug that 200, what Germany just did, if you can't learn from that, Germany dropping 50,000 Bitcoin on the open market in a week or two. If you're a country that isn't learning from that, then you have your head in the ground. And so for me, to have Trump talk about keeping that, understanding that there's value in Bitcoin. And he even went so far as to talk about, you know, Bitcoin and the dollar and how Bitcoin isn't a risk to the US dollar. The government is the risk to the US dollar. I was like, man, that's pretty solid coming from Donald Trump. And so, you know, that's a long way from a couple of years ago when he was like, I like the dollar. The dollar's number one. You know, I don't recall him ever saying, you know, we need to stop Bitcoin, but I was like, man, that's a pretty good take for somebody running for the president of the United States to say that the U.S. government's ruining the U.S. dollar. Like, that's whether he does something about it or not, or gets elected or not, is different. But having those thoughts bounce around in your head for the next few months before you potentially win the presidency there's something there for sure.
Well, they had one of those Democratic senators come on at some point and pretty much try to throw Trump under the bus and said, this is what he said before, like 4 or 5 years ago. And the moderator was like, well, people are allowed to change their mind, right? I mean, you look at like Larry Fink. Larry Fink hated Bitcoin, and now he's probably one of the biggest sales guys for Bitcoin, right? So it's one of those things. Well, yes, he did think that. Most people do think that originally when they get into Bitcoin. And then once they learn more, their mind has changed and usually their mind is blown and they're like, okay, yes, we need this. This is awesome. So
that was Ro Khanna, the California Democratic senator. And so he's pretty reasonable, but he and Trump were the only two sitting politicians that I recall politicizing Bitcoin. Trump said, you know, if Kamala wins, then, you know, you guys are done. Everything's over for you. You know, he was hyperbolic about the consequences of the election. And Ro Khanna did. And man, that moderator really said it. But what I would say is about this, the right thing to say, which is the most obvious thing to say. Like, people change their mind and everybody's against Bitcoin until they're for it. If Bitcoin was that easy to understand, adopt and like, we would already be way ahead of where we are from a Bitcoin adoption standpoint. I mean, it takes forever for these things to start to kind of these ideas to marinate and turn around. So yeah, I thought that was handled really well by the moderator too.
Yeah. And then I think the other exciting thing that we saw, and there wasn't a ton of details on it, but Cynthia Lummis, who is pretty much the Bitcoin senator, came on shortly after Trump and proposed or showed a bill and read from the bill of what it was going to propose Bitcoin as a reserve currency. Right. And the goal for that bill was to buy 1 million Bitcoin over the next 5 years and hold it for at least 20 years. And that would end up paying off some of the debt. Right. So if you look at from a reserve currency perspective, I was kind of looking at just what we have as a reserve currency. And right now, the Bitcoin that the U.S. does have is worth about $15 billion, right? The amount of gold that we have is about $608 billion. So if we would have bought 1 million Bitcoin over the last 5 years, which I know looking backwards, it probably would have changed quite dramatically if the U.S. government would have been buying it, but it would have cost us $31 billion and it would be worth $69 billion now. So you have about 120% return, right? So it's, I mean, sounds great. El Salvador's already done it and kind of proven it out, right? If the U.S. starts doing it, then holy cow, you don't expect the price to stay very low for long.
Yeah, and, you know, to talk about price, it wouldn't take much game theory knowledge to realize that if the United States does, honestly, just indicating that they would hold on to Bitcoin and use it as a stockpile, never mind the million. If they just said, look, we're holding this 200,000, we think Bitcoin, you know, Bitcoin's got a future appreciation, every other country's got to be like, okay, well, we might not need 200,000 Bitcoin, we might need 100,000, we need to start buying. And so to me, that's the game theory piece to that is more important than, you know, whatever happens starting in January of next year. So I like that. And then I did think that the way they handled it, where Trump said, I think Trump could hold on to that 200,000 Bitcoin. I don't know the legal ramifications of how to direct it, but to me, he should have that authority. If the president can write executive orders to do everything else that executive orders do, I would think he'd be able to handle that. But I don't know that he would be able to define it as a strategic asset and spend money, right? That Congress has to spend the money. And so to have Cynthia Lummis come up next and kind of go through the bill that was written and sponsored and co-sponsored, I mean, it's already like, it's not just an idea. I thought that was actually fairly well handled, and not instead of just making some kind of promise where people will be like, yeah, he said all this stuff and he can't do any of it. So I thought that part wasn't bad. So, like I said, it's been nice to be pandered to.
Yeah, you talked about RFK and his 4 million number. I think that actually came from Michael Saylor. Michael Saylor, I think, kicked it all off. And he had about a 45-minute presentation with a ton of slides that were, of course, always interesting to see. And what he pretty much talked about was almost five different stages of how to get involved. And one was kind of the, what do you call it, the triple bull or something like that, which is what MicroStrategy pretty much has done. And he was proposing that from a country perspective too, and not just country, but individual as well. And the triple bull for a country was 4 million Bitcoin. And he said, you can't have lots of countries do this because there's only 21 million. So if that does happen, good things will happen. And I think Kathy Wood had kind of come out saying that she agreed the U.S. should buy Bitcoin as a reserve currency. But his view was, if this does happen, And based on him running his numbers of like a 29% yearly return on average for the next 21 years, Bitcoin's going to be about 7% of the entire global wealth, which makes it from a very small speck to actually inherit a block big enough to be able to see. So it's still not huge, but 7% is a lot. That puts Bitcoin, his base case, I guess you could say, is around $13 million of Bitcoin in 21 years. So the range is anywhere from 3 to 49 million based on his numbers, right? So it's crazy numbers by 2045 to hear that being thrown out, but exciting if that's going to happen. And even Van Eck, I think, came out and said if the reserve currency does happen, a $52 million Bitcoin by then is definitely possible. So some definitely big numbers being thrown out that, and ways to get there too.
Yeah, that's not for me. That's really big thinking, and you know, taking over the world. 7% of the total global wealth is wild. I mean, I'm in my mind, if I get to see Bitcoin overcome gold and get to that $750,000 number, you know, gold keeps going up, so Bitcoin has to keep chasing it. But you know, we're talking the $750,000 in the last few years. 12 to 15 trillion dollar market cap. That to me is like huge, right? And so I'll leave it there. I'll let other people think about it. Like I'm a small business guy, right? I'm not a big business guy. Like I don't grow billion-dollar businesses and take them public and try to take over the world. I'm like, yeah, this is good enough. I like to define success. And then that way I know when I'm successful and I'm not just constantly chasing something forever. And once we get to gold, like Bitcoin's success up to this point is wild, right? We're boring at $60,000 Bitcoin for the last 5 months. That's hugely successful compared to where we've been since you and I got into this thing, you know, 7 years ago, where, I mean, price was not boring for 5 months ever. If it was boring, it was miserable because it was like in the crypto winter and not moving from the basement. So for me, if we see it pick up, then that'd be great. But Bitcoin's all about like these little nuggets, these little like chipping away El Salvador 3 years ago. You know, without the El Salvador piece 3 years ago, I don't think you have Donald Trump talking at Bitcoin 2024 and considering holding on to 200,000 Bitcoin. You know, so things like this really matter. They just don't matter today. And so I'll take it. And I've got a friend of mine, and he's a real smart guy. But he was texting, and I was like, hey, Trump's he's a conservative guy, so he's like not anti-Trump. And I was like, Trump's going to speak at the Bitcoin conference, you know, if you all want to listen. And he was like, oh, this is just what decentralization needs is, you know, the federal government to adopt it. And I was like, hey, man, you're the same guy that 5 years ago was like, there's no way the U.S. government will allow Bitcoin to prosper. They're going to stomp it out. Bitcoin doesn't have a chance. I'm like, you're using two different arguments against Bitcoin that are completely opposed. So like, and I told him, I was like, if Bitcoin is going to go where I think it's going to go, then governments have to adopt it. Like you don't have a choice. And the same goes for the banks and the ETFs and all the other things. Like you're not going to get to 7% of global wealth without banks and governments getting into it. You only have two choices. You can either get into it and adopt it, or you can fight it. And you don't want them to fight it, because then it makes everything take a lot longer. So I just think it's funny that people that are against Bitcoin will just use whatever narrative is at their fingertips to prove a point. But it's very short-sighted.
Yeah, I mean, so Alex Gladstein was one of the other guys that presented at Bitcoin conference, and he's got a really good book out there, but he did a lot of showing how Bitcoin was making a difference in a lot of the smaller countries that nobody thinks about too. Bitcoin has been definitely one of these grassroots efforts that I think it makes a bigger deal for a lot of the rest of the world that people in the U.S. don't really understand, because we have such a good fiat currency compared to the rest of the world and a banking system and everything else that kind of goes into play. So I mean, yes, the adoption of Bitcoin by governments like the U.S. and others will help with the price, but it is not going anywhere from what it's being, enabling a lot of these third world countries to actually get involved. I mean, you look at the crypto users in the US today, and I think I was reading that there's like twice as many crypto users as there are people that own stocks now in the US, which is crazy to me. But if you think about a lot of other countries in Africa and places like that, they don't even have access to any sort of stock market or anything, right? So this is the closest thing they'll ever have to having some sort of investment to get them to move them forward, rather than just constantly spending every dollar they get because it's getting deflated away at 50, 100, 300% a year, right? So it's amazing what it's going to enable the rest of the world, but I still think it's going to do a lot of potential from here on out. And I've talked to people here recently, they're like, oh yeah, I got to look at something other than Bitcoin because Bitcoin's done. I want to find the next thing. Maybe Ripple is going to take off. And I'm like, don't look at that. Like, Bitcoin's got a long ways to go. Like, don't count them out. And this is one of those things where if you look long term, I do like how Michael Saylor has kind of broken it down to somewhat help people understand. And there is still a long term potential for this to do 1,000x or even less, right? But it's exciting to see those numbers, even though it's still 20 plus years away. But it's still, I mean, it's bound to happen with the trajectory that Bitcoin has today.
Yeah, and Saylor went into that like 20 years, 50 years. He went into a lot of different assets and broke down like how long they're going to survive. And mm-hmm. and how, like, if you get into real estate, then taxes and maintenance eat you up and your money's gone in 50 years. And, you know, he just kind of went through that. And Bitcoin's the only one where, like, I mean, I own real estate. I mean, I $6,000 for an air conditioner this week. You know what I didn't have to do for Bitcoin? I didn't have to spend a penny to maintain Bitcoin. And price might go up and down in the short term, and in the long term it goes up. But I bought hardware wallets to store it in, right? Like, if you look at it, the cost of me to store Bitcoin is as a percentage of my holdings is insignificant, right? So, no, I think you've got some really strong tailwinds for Bitcoin adoption. It's like you and me, right? That you were into Bitcoin for maybe a few months before you brought it to me. And I'm like, okay, I'll start looking into it. And I got into it. You know, everybody's going to have that person that opens their eyes to be like, okay, well, this thing that was for other people, maybe it's for me, and I'll look into it. Donald Trump you probably brought in a couple dozen or whatever people. Donald Trump might bring in 500,000 to a couple of million people. And so, you know, those things matter. And I think that people get so used to things happening so quickly that they won't even notice what happened 3 years from now because Donald Trump spoke at Bitcoin 2024. And not only Donald Trump, like, this was we talked about regulation and politics a lot this year, but Bitcoin 2020, I wrote these down. Senator Cynthia Lummis, who's Bitcoiner, like, she's going to be there every year. Tim Scott, Republican from South Carolina, was there, and he's likely to be the chairman for the Senate Banking Committee. So that's a good person to have here. He was also a presidential candidate for the Republican side. I don't recall him doing particularly well, but he was also mentioned for the VP spot. So he's a real politician. He's kind of a goof, I think, but he has a lot of influence. You had Senator Bill Hagerty, who is a Tennessee Republican, right? It's in Tennessee. So both senators, Marsha Blackburn and Hagerty, were there, which I don't recall both Florida senators being at the Bitcoin 2023 and 2022 and 2021 conferences in Miami. So there were a lot of Republicans. John Deaton, who's running against Elizabeth Warren, was there. They had a panel of basically three Bitcoin, pro-Bitcoin politicians that spoke. It was kind of boring. I don't really get into it, but it's kind of a neat listen if you're just driving in your car.
I really actually liked that listen. So it was short, kind of compared to a lot of the other stuff, but it was good to hear. So yeah, that there are some guys out there like that. And I probably don't hear that enough, right? So that was exciting to hear.
Yeah, I just don't like politics. And so for me to listen to three politicians talk about politics, you know, it was interesting. Like I said, it's kind of a casual listen. It's not like there's a lot of information in there that's going to like open your mind. And then Vivek Ramaswamy spoke too. on a panel. So you're talking about a pretty decent thing. Scaramucci was there, which he's kind of a finance. I wouldn't consider him to be a politician because he's only a politician for 2 weeks, but he is political. And so there's quite a bit of that. And that's a good thing because you have people there. I mean, there was a whole panel about how the government's being awful. Like it was, that one was super entertaining. That I can't remember. He's a comedian. Oh, what's his name, man? He was funny. But you basically had anti-government people. Dave Smith is who it was. Government out of control. And Mark Moss, Luke Groman, Dave Smith, and it was moderated by Guy Swan. Just a pretty solid panel. And they were talking. I mean, he started out by, he said, "Have you heard about this kid, Joe Biden? He's the future, man." It's like just completely making fun of politics right out of the gate. And then Donald Trump speaks at the same conference. And, you know, I've been to a lot of conferences. You don't hear the power conference never had people that talked about how we should not have electricity. You know, this one basically said the government sucks and, hey, we're the government. We're here to help. Hours apart. Like it's, I'm telling you, Bitcoin is a different animal compared to everything else. You have people talking about the progressive vision for Bitcoin. That's the one where Ro Khanna was, it was like the progressive side of Bitcoin. And then you have a bunch of Republican conservatives talk about Bitcoin. So that's what I dig is it's like, yeah, you can make it political if you'd like to, but it's not political.
Yeah. So one of the other ones that was kind of interesting was Cantor Fitzgerald, which is probably one of the world's largest bond brokers, was the CEO was there talking about it. And there are two main points that he talked about. One was actually on stablecoins and saying how he was defending Tether, which it's hard to find people that defend Tether in general these days. But he was comparing it to USDC, which it seems to be kind of the new one that's going to overtake Tether from Circle. But from a brokerage perspective, they were going to allow him something's crazy, like $1 million a day or something like that, and only 500,000 redemption. I don't know what the numbers are, but it was like, he's like, we can't do this when we're doing billions of volumes a day, right? The other cool thing that he did say was that they're going to start a $2 billion Bitcoin funding company, right? And that they'll keep increasing that by $2 billion as it grows. But it's just giving now kind of a place for people with Bitcoin to go and get loans using Bitcoin as collateral, which is kind of a big deal for this huge brokerage company out there that has lived their life all on bonds in the commodity market for so long. And now they are moving to Bitcoin.
No, I was definitely going to bring up his speech as something to talk about because I haven't seen anybody else talk about it. It seemed like he was speaking to an empty room. Like, I don't know if he was speaking at the same time as Donald Trump or something, but like there was, I don't think there was anybody in there. There's nobody ever applauded. And it was like, he was trying to generate a lot of energy. Like when he talked about terrorism and things like that, because Cantor Fitzgerald is the company that basically got gutted in 9/11. They lost everybody. I think his brother died in 9/11. He said there were over 900 employees from Cantor Fitzgerald that died. There's only 3,000 people. I mean, they were like one of the biggest impacts. So when he talked about how Tether was accused of financing jihad, he got very emotional and angry, energized, and the crowd did not respond. So I was like, there's nobody in this crowd. He's speaking to an empty room. But yeah, so if you can use your Bitcoin as collateral for a loan, what a game changer, right? That's what it takes in order to improve your lifestyle and not sell your Bitcoin, right? Is just to get loans against your Bitcoin. And honestly, get loans against your Bitcoin at a super low, you know, loan to value kind of thing. So you don't get margin called, but buy more Bitcoin with it. I mean, like, I'm not saying everybody should do this, but like, man, there's definitely value in that. He also talked about the, go ahead and let me come back to it.
You know, that kind of reminds me, it was a Peter Schiff or something like that was kind of blowing people up saying, well, if everybody keeps saying they don't want to sell their Bitcoin, why are you buying it? Right. And this to me is that answer that I've been always saying I want to be able to do is I don't want to sell my Bitcoin. I just want to take a loan against it and be able to pay it back because you have an appreciating asset. So why sell an appreciating asset if you can loan money against it and then pay it back with depreciating dollars in the future?
Right. And also you don't have to pay taxes on that, on the proceeds from that loan.
And that's so you hold,
you hold your Bitcoin. You don't have to pay capital gains taxes. And then you can just make the decision as to whether or not you pay off the loan or you just wait 5 years, Bitcoin doubles, and then you refinance that loan and pull out more cash. So that, you know, that's the thing. What I was going to mention is going to go back to USDT. This was one of the reasons I like this is because it felt like a glimpse behind the curtain where he talked about them pairing with USDT. All the backing is there. Basically, he said everything that they say they have. And it was super interesting when he said that FTX tried to smash Tether by redeeming $10 billion worth in a day. And Cantor Fitzgerald was like, yeah, no problem. they thought they were going to crash Tether. And so the Circle would win or whatever. And so I was like, okay, that's a good thing. Because Tether, whatever, man, you know, I'm a Bitcoiner, but I think stablecoins have a huge spot because if I'm a poor person in Venezuela, I still have to eat. I don't want to buy Bitcoin on Monday and use it to buy bread on Friday. Stablecoins make sense for that. And so whether, you know, in the United States, I think people view Tether as like the leverage gambling on altcoins and things like that. But I think there's the use case for stablecoins is very obvious. Getting adoption into stablecoins to me is the easiest thing to get of all the crypto stuff, because everybody globally knows about the dollar and has, until you're into Bitcoin, you trust the dollar. There's no other options, you know, like, so to me that's a pretty bullish piece to the puzzle. The funny thing that I found when I was sitting there thinking about it, I'm like, you know, everybody just talked about how bad Tether is and it's fake and it's not backed by anything and it's a scam and everything else. And Tether's just been thumping along, doing things right, apparently, and backing everything. Nobody said that about Sam Bankman-Fried and FTX. Nobody's like, oh, this is a scam. You got to look out. They were like, he was in with politicians. He's in, like, he's got Tom Brady. He did all this stuff. And he's was backed by nothing. And he was rehypothecating everything. And he was just the biggest fraudster. And no one even gave a warning until the whole thing collapsed in a day. So it's like, man, it's just everything is crap. Like if you are told something, it's probably not true. And if you hear it three times, it's almost definitely not true. So I that was one of my takeaways is like, man, okay, maybe Tether is doing really good because everybody talks crap about them.
Well, we've talked about them in the past couple of months, how they're expanding away from just stablecoins, right? And they're going to have three other different business units and do a lot of other things. So, I don't know one way or the other if they're good or bad. They are definitely being successful. So, and they're providing a necessary service. I'm intrigued to see how they continue to grow and how things continue to get better, hopefully for them and for everybody involved in the crypto space. All right. So I know we talked a ton about the Bitcoin conference and there are a ton of other things that we probably want to run through real quick about what's happened here in the past week or so. The other big thing that kind of popped out on my radar was Elizabeth Warren was pretty active again talking, and she took aim at Bitcoin mining, which is kind of funny because I feel like she tries to do that every so often. And this time she was saying that, I think, two things. One is that China was using Bitcoin mining in the US to spy on us, and also that they could use it to take down the power grid, which, I mean, we've talked about how helpful Bitcoin mining has been for the power grid. So this is kind of funny that she's saying the opposite. I mean, I think everybody should be aware by now, our power grid is very fragile with how it is right now. So we've had, I think there's a couple of books been written that saying a couple of people with high powered guns could go take out a couple of key areas and shut down the entire East Coast for a year. Right. So our power grid is very scary, and hence why, shoot, you probably know more than this than any of us just because you spent so much time there. But I mean, the importance of nuclear and even just some other source of power that isn't reliant on coal and constantly having something up and running is huge too.
Yeah, I think I did not read the thesis on how Bitcoin mining could lead to spying by the Chinese government. You know, I've had miners running in my basement, they can't do anything. They can only mine Bitcoin. Like that's their whole purpose. And they're not computers. You can't log into them and get them to do other things. They just, there's a little chipset. It just runs. So I need to do a little bit more of that to figure out where that came from.
I think it goes back to Elizabeth Warren has still yet to spend any time trying to understand how crypto and blockchain work. Right. And what was interesting is she had, I guess, released the digital anti-money laundering bill of 2023 not too long ago. And one of the co-sponsors was Roger Marshall, who's a Republican. He has finally, he's become the first co-sponsor to walk away from co-sponsoring that bill, which doesn't usually happen in Congress at all. So it's kind of, he was anti-crypto and now he has learned that that is not what he wants to be. So it's kind of nice to see someone or more people trying to distance themselves from Elizabeth Warren and her crazy policies.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to get reelected, I think Donald Trump raising $25 million for a speech and having a $200 million super PAC for Bitcoin and crypto, I feel like there's a message there that Bitcoiners and crypto people in general are sending. And it's like, hey, you got to pay attention to us. You can't be against us. You can be a neutral. I would be fine with neutral. Leave us alone. No problem. Let us do our thing. But if you're against us, I think you're going down. And maybe not this election cycle. Maybe it's the next one. But like the future isn't looking good for you. And then, but to circle back, like Elizabeth Warren talking about it bringing down the power grid with Bitcoin mining, you can only do two things with Bitcoin miners. You can turn them on and turn them off. That's it. That's all they got as far as power is concerned. So if you turn on too many of them, okay, well, now you have a brownout situation. That's not destroying the grid. Yeah. All right. If you turn them off, all off, if you have hundreds of megawatts and you turn them all off at once, you blow transformers, that would be bad. But everybody's had a power outage from a blown transformer. So, but no one's going to do that. You get to do that one time. And then your power providers are going to be like, all right, we're done with you. You can never turn those miners back on because you're not going to get power again because your power provider is not going to give you a deal. So it's a wild thing to think. And not only that, the grid, we're a federation of 50 states, and that kind of has led to us having a power grid that's got these small interconnectivities at some state borders and strong interconnectivities at other state borders. So like you can't bring down the United States power grid. You can bring down parts of the United States power grid. Like Texas can't bring down the Oklahoma power grid. There's not enough interconnectivity. So it's just dumb people saying dumb things to convince other dumb people that something's bad. So
yeah.
I am strongly hoping if John Deason doesn't beat her, I hope that it's like something close.
Well, I think John Deason still has to get back past the other Republican in the primary too. But at this point, either one of them is better than Elizabeth Warren. So Wyoming also announced that they're going to be launching a Bitcoin Research Institute, which is kind of interesting. Their whole goal is to have high quality studies around Bitcoin, since there doesn't seem to be a lot of those. I think that's going to launch either later this year or next year. But that'll be kind of cool to have almost an entire academic organization focused on providing those studies. And Wyoming is definitely one of those states that's leading in just Bitcoin education and adoption. So yeah, I'm excited to see where that goes for sure.
Yeah, they had a part of the conference, like a speech on the conference, and that's on my list of things to watch. But Wyoming, man, they're like, it's weird, but they're always on the cutting edge of innovation. Like women's suffrage, like Wyoming was first. Like Bitcoin, Wyoming's first. You know, maybe part of that is just living in a difficult place to live, so you don't mind the challenge of being first. But yeah, I actually lived in Wyoming for 6 months when I was young, so it's a cool place.
Yeah. So speaking of suffrage, I know there we've talked about some of the super PACs of everybody spending a lot of money trying to get the right people into the Senate or wherever from a crypto-friendly perspective. There's a Project Swing was just launched by, I forget what her name is, but she is launching this project and it's really focused on two parts, voter registration and then an education program. And the education program is, I think, centered a lot around crypto, but they're focused on the swing states. So Georgia is one of those, Michigan, Arizona, North Carolina, Nevada, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Pennsylvania. So it'll be interesting to see if this kind of grassroots effort of helping people learn about crypto, getting them registered, and then using their votes to make a difference, if that does anything, and if that's better than just spending a crap ton of ads on the candidates that you think are going to be better in the long term.
Yeah, anything is better than seeing ads that you can't skip on YouTube that are a minute long. Like, give me any other option to spread, for those people to spread their ideas, than blocking everything I want to watch.
Yeah, and then I know some small things here. Kraken is done distributing their Mt. Gox Bitcoin, or crypto, I should say, because some of it was Bitcoin Cash. There's still about $5.7 billion left in the treasuries from Mt. Gox, which is about 60% of their entire amount. So we're almost halfway through that. And then Jersey City, their pension fund, just announced that they're going to buy some Bitcoin ETFs. So kind of the next big pension fund that we're hearing that is jumping on board, which is exciting to hear as well.
Yep. I dig it. I think that if you're a pension fund, you really have to consider a couple percent, 2-3% allocation into Bitcoin, because you're chasing some crazy inflation. And what you have is very important to the livelihood of the people that put money into your pension for their future well-being. So I think Wisconsin went in a big way, or I'm sorry, Wisconsin went in. I think that they are going to continually accrue more until they get a greater percentage holding in their portfolio. But yeah, I mean, there's a fireman's pension that's been in Bitcoin for years. I think it's California Fireman's Pension or something. But like, that's why that one's important. 5 years ago, nobody followed them until now. Right. Mm-hmm. And nobody followed Sailor until Similar Scientific and Metaplanet. Like, that, you know, going from 0 to 1 takes forever. Going from 1 to 3, not so bad. Going from 3 to 30 is quick. So, yeah. The faster we get to 3, 4 for these things, then the slippery slope happens. So, you know, I'm ready for the steep part of the adoption curve. So, you know, I'm all for this stuff. And it's funny because it's great to hear. Like the Wisconsin thing, we probably talked 5 or 10 minutes on the Wisconsin pension fund. This one's like, oh, great, another one. Yep. It's such a difference. It's so different when adoption starts occurring. It just, you start looking for the next thing that Bitcoin's going to touch. And then meanwhile, pension after pension after pension is adopting.
Well, yeah, I mean, talked about last week, somebody in France was doing it, right? So it's just all of a sudden they're starting to drop one after another, which is exciting to see. And what we haven't talked about lately, and I know it's probably you don't care nearly as much about it because it's not Bitcoin, but it was a big deal last week, the Ethereum ETFs, right? They launched in typical, not a lot of fanfare, right? I mean, it was negative inflows. I think it was $342 million of outflows last week. But $1.5 billion of outflows came from Grayscale. So all the other ones actually had a pretty decent inflow and a lot of excitement. It's just Grayscale had their 2.5% fee fund that everybody wanted to get out of because their stuff that's 100 times less.
Hey, I told you, man, as soon as when the Bitcoin ETF was approved, I learned my lesson. And in my Roth, I bought the Grayscale Ethereum fund, and it was trading at a discount. So Ethereum went up, the discount disappeared. And then I've sold my Grayscale Ethereum ETF and bought the Bitwise Ethereum ETF. There's no tax consequences. It was like, I finally did something. Yeah. Like I finally made a trade in crypto. Yep. It was like finally a successful trade in crypto that I actually executed and didn't just hold on to forever. So yeah, I paid a little bit of attention. I think Ethereum's going up. I think money's going to come in. They talked about it a little bit in the, there was a BlackRock conversation, Robert Motchik, and he said that the Ethereum ETF is likely to be additive to the Bitcoin ETF because they're not viewing it as a replacement. They're viewing it as a complementary to.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I think long-term it'll be fine. It was just a lot of hoopla what's expected last week. And I mean, the markets in general have struggled. So it's not just an Ethereum thing. It's everybody's struggling here lately. So jumping back to kind of the Trump talk at Bitcoin conference. So a couple things have happened because of that in other countries. And Hong Kong had a lawmaker that came out and said he suggested Hong Kong looking at Bitcoin for a reserve currency based on hearing Trump mention it. And then Justin Sun has also pushed China to reconsider crypto after Trump's speech as well. So, and I mean, the thought being, if you have two theoretically superpowers competing for Bitcoin, it's good for Bitcoin in general, right? And you don't want just one country owning it all anyways. So,
well, especially if you're the other one, like that's, I'm telling you, like you can't let your competitor do something that you know about that's going to give them an edge. Especially if it's such a small allocation. It's not like the U.S. government's going to go on a Bitcoin standard. You know, it's a play, and it's so, you know, to me, everyone has to pay attention now from a government standpoint. El Salvador, like the timing's great too, because El Salvador's up 50% on their Bitcoin allocation, and they have like a pretty sound strategy of just buying Bitcoin, one Bitcoin every day. And so, you know, whether or not other countries are going to use it as a legal tender, to me, is not that important, because you have to be identified as valuable before people are going to trade goods and services for the thing that is valuable. I mean, if a country or people don't think Bitcoin has any value, it's not a currency. You're not going to be able to trade it for anything. So this is like a weird top-down approach to Bitcoin being viewed as valuable that I didn't expect to see. You know, Bitcoin's always been a bottom-up, like guys like me and you and people that kind of figured out and like it and that like the philosophy of it. I mean, that's really what Bitcoin was in 2017, was an idea that had a token to it and a potential. And then as that thing catches on, you got the people in other countries that don't have good currency, like they find value in it. But like eventually, if it's deemed valuable by governments, it's going to be hard for somebody like Elizabeth Warren to tell me or convince anybody that it's not valuable. So yeah, it's the game theory is a big deal.
Yeah. So speaking of El Salvador, they were in the news here recently too, because they've historically had a big import-export business with Russia. And with Russia being somewhat on the outs with the rest of the world, it's been difficult to settle in dollars because Russia's not allowed to do that. So what they proposed to Russia was, hey, we'll settle our trade in Bitcoin, right? Which is, I think, probably one of the first countries that's talked about using Bitcoin to settle trade. And I mean, whether you like Russia or not, it doesn't matter. It's if Bitcoin becomes that medium exchange for country to country, that's pretty big too.
Yeah, and I think that the liquidity may be a problem if you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars at a time. But I think that's where it's going, right? I think that, again, El Salvador just seems to be cool with being way ahead. You know, Michael Saylor seems to be cool way ahead, but I'm not sure that it's ready for that. But if it's not ready for it, then you just can't use it as much as you thought you could. You know, you use it here and there.
Well, luckily they're so small that it's not going to be the same size of a lot of other countries doing all this. So,
6 million people.
Yeah, El Salvador. Yeah, I mean it's going to make a dent, but not that big of a dent. The other thing that I saw too was Qatar was in the news. So Qatar was one of the countries that had banned crypto in 2018. And they have just announced that they are now expecting to have a digital assets framework by the end of this year. So complete 180, which is kind of crazy, but then again, not surprising with everything else that we're hearing.
Yeah, there's been a lot of speculation about Qatar being buyer. They've done a lot of mining, stuff like that. So the Middle East doesn't get talked about much, but it seems like they're adopting maybe not a country-wide, but or a government-wide adoption, but it definitely seems like they're crypto-friendly. But they're also, I mean, they got a lot of oil, and that's a lot of cheap energy, and cheap energy turned into Bitcoin is, you know, it's not a bad way to do it.
Yeah, so jumping over to the EU, Slovenia has now become the first EU nation to issue a sovereign digital fund or digital bond, I guess it is, right? 30 million euros at 3.65%. So it's always exciting to see more of this becoming digital. And I don't know how that's really going to help Bitcoin per se, but it is kind of just going this whole tokenization of everything. We're starting to see it in every country now.
Yeah, you know, California tokenized the DMV car titles and stuff like that. So starting to see little things pop out here and there. It's something.
Last week, we talked about one of the Indian exchanges, Wazir X, and how they had been hacked. They just put out a questionnaire this past week that did not make a lot of people happy. Pretty much said that, to sum it up quickly, is that you're going to get about 55% of your crypto back because they're socializing the loss. So nobody's really excited about that right now. And I think you can get more back depending on how much they get back from all of this. But just goes to show, be careful about keeping your crypto on exchanges because it's not your crypto at that point. It's theirs and they can decide what to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't imagine, like, oh man, I dodged a bullet. The exchange I had my Bitcoin on got hacked and other people lost money, but mine's okay. And then they come back and say, hey, we're going to just share these losses across the entire platform. You get to lose half of your Bitcoin. That would be a bad lesson to learn. I'm much happier to learn that through other people's lessons.
And last week we talked about Block leaving the UK. Well, Revolt just got their UK banking license. It took 3 years from when they applied, which to me is crazy, but I guess it is good for those people in the UK to have another fintech company that is very crypto friendly over there as an option.
Yeah, like, you know, we talked about the UK. They have every reason to just be the crypto friendliest place on earth, and they seem to be okay, but they drag their feet a lot.
Yeah, and then there was a company called One Trading over in Europe that just got approval to offer crypto derivatives in Europe. And they are, I think, the only one that does crypto derivatives, and they're also the first to settle in cash. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. But it is exciting to see that the EU is passing laws that allow companies to get more involved in that space.
Yeah, I mean, the EU seems to be, they seem to get it. They seem to realize, like, hey, you don't want to be against this stuff.
And then I've not been shy about sharing my thoughts on zero knowledge proofs and how exciting they are for the future. There was a couple of really interesting things that popped out from zero knowledge proofs in Bitcoin. So Bitcoin OS, they verified a zero knowledge proof on the Bitcoin mainnet for the first time last week. And this is exciting because there's no need to fork the code. What it allows is something that is literally able to do zero knowledge proofs on Bitcoin's network, which is a way to almost replace a Lightning network, right? So you don't have to open all the nodes that you do with Lightning, and it's just part of the Bitcoin mainnet. So that was really exciting. And then Rootstock, which is one of the layer twos on Bitcoin, they verified a zero knowledge snark using their BitVMX on the Bitcoin mainnet. So now you have two companies that are doing zero knowledge stuff. Well, last week we talked about another one that had done it on the testnet, but now there's two on the mainnet. So it's exciting to see all this stuff happening. I would say it's still a little ways away before you really want to spend a ton of time on this, but now they've proven it out, we'll see how many people kind of jump on board and start to create other paths of usage for a lot of this moving forward. Because to me, the privacy piece is huge, right? If you can do all this and keep all your transactions private, that's what Bitcoin has kind of gotten away from, but people are not using Bitcoin sometimes because it's not private. And this way it could be a little bit more private, which would be helpful.
Yeah. There was a panel on zero knowledge proofs in Bitcoin at the Bitcoin conference. I didn't watch it, nor did I even take note of what it was titled. But I haven't heard anybody talk about it, or I have no idea, but I read the title. I'm like, oh, Jason might be interested in that one.
Yeah, I didn't see that. So I'll have to go back and look at that one. So Coinbase had some news too. Base, which is their layer two, they just launched their stage one decentralization on their testnet, which is really deploying fault proofs and allows them to become more decentralized, which is kind of just good news from a layer two perspective. And then also Atari, which you probably played when you grew up. I know I did. Oh. They are building a project on Base. It is almost like a online arcade. So you need an NFT to play. And then when you do that, you're able to be eligible for the weekly leaderboards and win some rewards. So it's kind of exciting they're doing that, and they're building it all on Base. So Coinbase is getting some good press there too.
if they bring back Altered Beast and you can win crypto from playing Altered Beast, I think I would probably play a little bit.
Well, that is not the first game that they're doing. I want to say it was, man, one of the shooting games. I forgot which one it was, but yes. One that I didn't really play a ton of. But yeah, it's still exciting to see. Yep. A lot of news in the mining space too. So Riot acquired Block Mining, which is based in Kentucky, I think for about $92.5 million, gave them about 60 megawatts of mining. I think they're going to have almost twice that by the end of the year and close to 300 in the future. So that's kind of exciting that we've talked about this. After the halving, you're going to start to see a lot more of the miner capitulate and people acquiring some of the smaller companies that aren't as profitable.
Yeah. I mean, if you're that small company, your value, if you have antiquated miners that aren't profitable, your value is in your agreement on power. Yeah. And so, you know, I don't know that deal. I'm aware of that deal, but I didn't look at the details. But to me, if you're looking at acquiring somebody, like, yeah, thanks for these miners, maybe we can sell them back to China for a nickel. But being able to get 60 megawatts of power at 300 kilowatt hours, that's where the value is.
And then Marathon, who's one of the largest miners out there, they just bought $100 million of Bitcoin to HODL. And they now hold more than 20,000 Bitcoin worth over $1.3 billion. So they're getting to the point now where you're seeing the big miners buy Bitcoin instead of just constantly sell to pay for it, which is kind of a good sign.
It's definitely a sign of strength. I mean, Bitcoin miners are supposed to sell Bitcoin in order to pay for their operations. And now that we're at 5% interest rates, you know, it's kind of tough to borrow, you know, even if you hold the Bitcoin and borrow the dollars, you know, 5% interest and the money's tighter than it used to be. So it's definitely a good sign, like show of strength for Marathon.
Yeah, I want to say they had like $350 million on their balance sheet of cash. So that's, I don't think they were financing anything. They were just going out to buy it.
Yeah.
And then another solo miner one. So a $200 mining rig at home ended up netting them about $210,000 in reward. So I was like,
it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's amazing to see when that happens and kind of exciting for that one person to pretty much win the lottery. What else? So Cathie Wood sold some of her Bitcoin ETF, which has kind of been, I guess, funny because I'm sure people will be like, oh, she's selling her own Bitcoin ETF. Well, part of her thing is she doesn't want any one asset in her ETF and her one of her funds to be over 10%. And the Bitcoin ETF continues to grow. I want to say it's done like 33% in this year, and her fund is up like 31% or vice versa, one of the two. So it's like all of her funds gains have almost come from the Bitcoin side of things. So
that's like if you're against Bitcoin, then Cathie Wood sold her Bitcoin ETF. If you're for Bitcoin, then Cathie Wood rebalanced her portfolio. Like, yeah, her Bitcoin gains were so much that she had to rebalance. So yeah, it's that you got to get used to that, right? All these, every major in this institution that buys in is going to rebalance when Bitcoin goes up. It's just part of how they operate.
Yeah. Starkware, which is one of the other ZK companies out there, just announced they're going to integrate with the Cosmos IBC protocol on their Starknet platform. So that's exciting to see, just more interoperability. It brings ZK technology to the Cosmos ecosystem, which is exciting. Fold, which we've talked about many, many times, is about to go public on NASDAQ. I don't know if you heard that or not. They're planning to merge with a SPAC, Emerald Acquisition Corp. They have about 1,000 Bitcoin on their balance sheet. So that's kind of impressive and exciting to see that a Bitcoin rewards / debit card is going to be going public on NASDAQ.
Yeah, their CEO has gotten super active on X, and they just changed their rewards so that you can pay your bills effectively and get Bitcoin rewards, which is kind of a workaround because I think everybody liked that PayPal credit card payment thing, and PayPal cut it, and for the most part. And so I think maybe they're capturing more of the float, but the rewards aren't incredible. I think it's like 0.25% for $1,000 a month, and it goes up. If you do 7,500 a month, you can get 1.5% of rewards in Bitcoin. But if you're paying your credit card bill and your mortgage and everything else, I mean, there's a large number of people, especially with inflation, that could probably get to that $5,000 to $7,000 range monthly.
Yeah, it's unfortunately on like the first $2,500, and then after that, it's like a quarter of a percent, right? So, but it's still, I mean, it's free Bitcoin for what you're already doing. So it's one of those things, it's hard to turn down free Bitcoin. Dakota actually emerged from stealth. So they are kind of a crypto bank to help with some of the DeFi protocols. They are theoretically focused more on companies rather than individuals. So they're going to charge companies somewhere between $150 to $1,500 a month. And then they'll help them use the best DeFi protocol to get returns on their money from that perspective, right? So some of the stable coins somehow get up to 9%, which I'm still not sure how that happens. But I mean, the average is of course, much lower. Some wallet news. Ledger released another wallet, their second of the year. It's called Ledger Flex. Ledger Stacks was the one that was released earlier this year. So we'll see kind of how that goes. It seems like it's kind of a high-end version of the Ledger Stacks, and it's more of a touchscreen. Proton also launched a self-custody Bitcoin wallet, which they're calling Proton Wallet. So super, took a long time from a marketing perspective. It is one of the other cool things that they're doing is that you can send Bitcoin to that wallet using email. So they've figured a way to do the email addresses and connect your wallets that way rather than having the 26 character address. And what's kind of cool is, for those people that don't know the backstory, is PayPal cut off Proton back in like 2014 because they weren't sure if what they were doing was legal because they were being secretive with their data and not sharing it with everybody. So it got to the point where Proton almost went under, but they turned to Bitcoin and people started paying with Bitcoin and it helped them survive, right? And if you look at where, if they kept that Bitcoin they had back then, Bitcoin has gone up 100x so from then. So we're not sure. I don't know if they have or not. I don't think we'll ever know. But that was kind of interesting. And it kind of goes back to Trump was talking about cutting off choke point 2.0. And that's what, we don't really talk much about that, but there's, it seems to be more and more of that where I think I read something and I haven't read details, but JP Morgan, I think, was even going to start cutting off credit card payments to companies they don't believe are good companies, right? The right industries. So this is more push to, for people to use Bitcoin where they don't have to get permission from credit card companies to make purchases with certain companies.
Yeah, just it reminded me that RFK Jr. talked about how the freedom of transaction is like tightly linked to the freedom of speech. And if you can, if a government or entity can restrict you from spending your money, they can restrict you from what you can say. So that kind of falls into that category for me.
And then the last thing that I had was Unbound just launched a Bitcoin Avenue to EU citizenship. So it takes about a 500,000 euro investment that goes into Portuguese companies, and you have to keep that money invested for 5 years. And then after that, you're eligible for citizenship without residency. All right. So kind of cool. I think it's definitely a minor thing for a lot of people that are, nobody has a 500K usually that are just sitting out there. They want to go invest into Portugal to get citizenship there. But for people that want out of whatever country they're in, it's now an option to get there without having to go live there for X number of years. All right. So we just covered a ton of stuff and I did a lot of that really quickly, but anything else that I missed from your perspective?
Yeah, I could do another 2 hours on the Bitcoin conference stuff. And I haven't watched all of the ones I want to watch yet. So that maybe next week I'll dive into a couple of those too. The one thing that we didn't talk about that was more crypto, less Bitcoin related was the SEC took another loss and dropped their suit against Binance, or at least the portions where they were trying to define Solana and other cryptocurrencies as securities. And so that's, you know, put it on the list of items that the SEC has had to backtrack or that the judicial system has straightened them out. So that I have not seen a pop in the price for any of those cryptocurrencies like Solana, and I don't think Ethereum was on there, but like Monero and, you know, kind of the down the list, down the market cap list cryptocurrencies. But that was, it's nice to be able to pull against the SEC and then and have stuff like that happen, because it's, they basically just thought they were going to fight a fight and they're like, yeah, no, we give up.
Yeah, there hasn't been a ton of details on that come out, but I did see that and intrigued to see what that means for this whole suit that's going on for sure. Cool. Well, yeah, holy cow, that was a lot. And looking forward to seeing what happens over the next week.
Yeah, same, man. That was good.
All right, we'll talk then. See ya.
All right. Thanks, Jason.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.